My name's JJ. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Congratulations,
Jimmy. Can't be too bad. Got the same initials. And 2 years sober is a big accomplishment, you know. And, I wish I had what you had in 2 years when I had 2 years, but I didn't. Because I decided to fight the program for as long as I possibly could, you know, just in case a cure turned up. It took a long time for it to sink in. I can't remember the last time I spoke. And so I probably belong up here. I can't even think of how I want to organize this or anything, you know, so I'm just going to go for it. I don't remember when I took my first drink, what age. It was a kid at a party, you know, like most kids. But I do remember my first high. My first high was in the dentist chair. Very first time I had nitrous oxide, I guess is what it is. They put the mask on me. I was just a kid, man. I loved it. And I think I chased that effect, you know, probably for the rest of my life, up until the time I found a program. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I was born in Brooklyn until the time I was three. We lived in a middle-class section of Brooklyn. And then my father and mother, chasing the American dream and guided by the Catholic religion, bought a house in a rural part of New Jersey. And needless to say, a couple of years after that, roof blew off. I had a sister born that was kind of retarded, and a lot of family and problems. I don't remember everything that was going on, but there's a lot of money problems and a lot of drinking going on. And eventually, we ended up back in Brooklyn in a less than middle class neighborhood. I guess when I was about nine. And I was pretty innocent about things when I got back to the city. It was kind of a rough neighborhood. Got beat up pretty regular when I first moved there. First day, as a matter of fact. I was christened. And I guess from that time on, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder, you know. And I had a lot of fear, and I think fear is the root cause for a lot of things that we do in our lives, and I think it's the main reason alcohol and drugs gave me, you know, what I needed to function in life, or made me feel that I fit in. I think they gave me the missing piece, but the problem is, after a while, it gave me more than just the missing piece, you know. Started giving me a whole different outlook on things, you know. And I started drinking and smoking pretty heavily by the time I was 11. So in 2 years, from the time I moved back into that city, I went from a pretty happy-go-lucky kid to just, you know, little snot nose on the corner, smoking cigarettes, drinking beers, you know. And at the same time, both my parents were alcoholics, and their diseases were progressing. And by the time I was 13, I was stepping over my father and mother pretty much. You know, my father, one of these construction worker types, get drunk, come home, you know, basically roaring type drunk. Where my mother would be the quiet, you know, hide the bottle in the toilet drunk type, you know. And so there was plenty of alcohol, cigarettes, and everything around the house, but by the time I was 13, I was pretty much, you know, out and about on my own. And, you know, people know you in your neighborhood, they know you in your building, and there was some older guys kind of took me under their wing, but, of course, they were the wrong types. And I started, you know, learning from role models, probably that I shouldn't have, you know, and And I liked it. I liked being treated like a big shot. And that's what they did. They let me do what I wanted to do. I came and I went as I pleased. And along about the time I was high school age, probably out of guilt, I'd already been in trouble over and over again, constantly in juvenile detention, things like that, for all kinds of things, from vandalism to stealing to just all kinds of shit that, you know, kids do. At least that's what I thought at the time, you know, just being a boy, you know. And probably out of guilt, I went to a high school that was a parochial school. It was a Catholic high school, and I went there because I was paying my own tuition from jobs that we had, whitewashing apartments. You know, me and a bunch of Puerto Rican guys, we whitewash these apartments for the landlord, and they pay us. I paid for the school. Meantime, I was eating good and was getting into the drugs and things like that. I always seemed to have money, always seemed to have something to drink, always seemed to have cigarettes, always seemed to have a place to stay. Just was never home, you know. And I went to school, you know, wasn't brilliant, but I was able to pass, you know. I was able to pass all my subjects. And about into my sophomore year in high school, I started living this kind of like double life, you know, because I'd go to school and I'd have these Irish Christian brothers at that school that would kind of tell me, you know, you got a real talent for this, or you got a real talent for that. And it was just pretty obvious that I wasn't the same on the outside of those schools as I was on the inside, you know. I remember I played baseball for that high school team. It was probably the only sane thing I did in high school. It was the only thing I really liked about high school, you know. And there was a coach on that baseball team that constantly told me, you know, things that I could be. And I would never believe him, because all the time growing up, I was always told the contrary. I was always told, you know, about the family curse. And the family curse was that no matter what you try to do in your life, it's going to turn to shit, because we only have one kind of luck, shit luck. You either got the luck of the Irish the good way, or you got the luck of the Irish the other way. And I believed it, you know. And I believed the other things that I was taught, like, you know, might makes right, and do unto them before they do unto you. All of that stuff, you know. I mean, I just believed it all. And I never quite felt like I fit in, unless I was stoned or drunk or, you know, doing some kind of chemical. And then for a while I'd fit in, and after that I was like in trouble. And the incidences where I got into trouble became closer and closer and closer together. You know, you'd have them stretches where you'd have a good time, everything was fine. You know, you drink all night long, blow your lunch, drink some more, you know, everything went fine, you wouldn't get in trouble. And then all of a sudden, boom, the shit would hit the fan, you know. Things started happening to me, and I started having blackouts. And we lived in one section of town had these brownstones. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the city, but the houses all looked the same, you know. And one night, for example, I don't know how else to do but bring up certain examples. Well, I'm not going to just spew out war stories all night, but just typical example of some of the things that alcohol did for me, right? Went to crash at a friend's house, and all the houses looked the same, you know. So I didn't think nothing of it when he said his sister was probably inside sleeping and he just didn't have a key, right? So boom, the window, you know, we're inside. Hey, you could sleep here on the couch. Nobody's there. Before I know it, there's, you know, lights, police come there to drag us downtown and all of this stuff, breaking and entering. And I didn't even take anything that time. And that's the time I got caught. Yeah. So that's what alcohol did for me. I had an opportunity for I got offered a baseball scholarship to Iona College, which is upstate New York, and showed up to the interviews drunk. And for some reason, that scholarship didn't work out, you know. never did put two and two together until much, much later. So I went to Brooklyn College for a short time, and I played a little ball for them, and eventually just dropped out of there, too. It seemed like any time I had somebody in my life that had some semblance of sanity, I would start veering the right way, you know. And I kind of got the notion by the time I was out of high school that if I could just find that straight arrow somewhere, you know, that would fix things. So now I'm beginning to realize that I'm having a problem with all of this stuff, but I'm still not blaming the chemicals or the drink. You know, I'm blaming situations, feeling sorry for myself in general, and I was never accountable for anything. I mean, nothing was ever my fault. There was always a reason why something happened to me, even if it was just shit luck. I don't know what's next, right? Okay. I screwed up just about every single relationship I was ever in, you know, and it was always because she was a bitch, you know. And if you were going with her, man, you get stoned every night too. All right, same thing with the job. The boss was a bastard, you know. Every job I ever had, guy's a fucking creep. That's why, you know. What are these doing? You know, he expects me to work for a living. Things like that. So everybody else was accountable for anything that ever happened to me. So I'd lose a job here and there. Well, lo and behold, I somehow managed to get into New York Telephone, and I found the perfect job. Found the alcoholic's dream job, because it was an outside cable splicing job, and it was in Manhattan, Midtown, and seemed like there was a Blarney Stone or some kind of dive bar in front of every manhole in the city, you know. And you could just take turns with your partner climbing out of the hole and going in, getting a couple of drinks, and then, you know, just take turns getting stoned, you know. At the time, I had just getting ready to get married. I found my straight arrow. And needless to say, she didn't cure me. So I married somebody that had a child previously, instant family type of thing, and I figured that would settle me down, and of course it didn't. And I ended up screwing up that relationship and going my separate ways probably about four or five times over, sometimes for years at a clip. And I would always... we'd always get back together and try again, and it was always alcohol or drugs that got in the way. So I decided that the reason I was having so many problems was because I had her in the city, and if I moved them out to the suburbs, you know, that would kind of cure everything, because then I'd be more responsible about getting home, and I wouldn't be so drawn to all of the things that happened in the city, you know. So I moved her out to a New Jersey suburb, and the only thing that did for me was make me miss the last bus at 11:30 out to the suburbs, because the bars stay open till 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning, you know. So I never went home. That's the kind of responsibility I had, you know, to my family. It was just purely on paper. I don't even know what it was. I had no understanding of what responsibility was. Didn't care, you know. Alcohol robbed me of all of those kinds of even conscience. I had no conscience. Grew up as a kid, the neighborhood had all kinds of elite groups, you know. Seemed like my neighborhood was the playground for the Hells Angels and the mobsters and, you know, all the titty bars and everything. They were all down. It was like, you know, it was a devil's paradise. And I grew up thinking that, you know, this was it. I used to watch shows as I was a kid. I said this in meetings before, but I used to watch them shows as a kid, like the Brady Bunch and Leave It to Beaver, you know. And I'd look around me and I'd say, what the fuck happened to me, you know? And And of course, you know, that was somebody else's fault too, you know. Anyway, my drinking really started getting bad. It got beyond just heavy drinking and becoming a drunk. It got to the point where I had to start lowering the class of people I hung with, you know. Because I kept having to find people that were just a little bit below me, you know, because I had to balance things out. And I had to start finding, you know, places to drink that would, you know, kind of had a... Luckily, there was a long scale, you know. And I used to pat myself on the back about how resourceful and clever I was, you know. You know, because I would finish work probably about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, let's see, so I'm still working. The last buzz is 11:30 at night. I could probably drink for about 6 hours, shoot over there, grab the bus. Everything will be fine, you know. I'll come 10 o'clock, I ain't finished drinking. Now it's 12 o'clock at night. I'm supposed to start in the morning. Hey, you know, it's midnight. Even if I could take that bus home, take me an hour and a half to get home, sleep for 2 hours and come back. What's the point in that, you know? I'd rather sleep under the tool cart right by the manhole out in the street. This way I get my 6 hours sleep, you know, if I don't pass out or whatever, in the bar. And so I was clever. That's how I get my sleep every night. And then, you know, things would happen to me like just uncanny things. Like waking up to like the strange loud sound, you know, and then realizing my head was on the horn and the steering wheel, you know, in the parking lot someplace. And another time, and I don't know how I got away with this. I had this car, you know, we called it the Fishmobile. It was one of them old Dodge Chinese taillights and all, you know. Had no seats in it, no reverse. So to park it, like, I'd have to pull it up to the next car up, and then we'd jump out and push it back into the spot, you know. And no license, no registration, no nothing. And we used to cruise around in this thing, and one night I ran out of money. So I double parked it on 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. I mean, left it running, nobody in it. 4 ways flashing in the middle of the street. Went upstairs looking for money, passed out. And the next morning, I mean, like 9:30 in the morning or something, I went downstairs and there it is. I forgot I left it there until I went outside. And actually, I went down there. There's the car, double parked, out of gas, 4 ways still going. Nobody stole it. To this day, I can't figure that out, you know, because I mean, people used to break into things and steal them, you know. And here I was giving it to them. I guess they figured, you know, somebody probably standing right there watching. To this day, I can't figure out why that car wasn't gone. Unless, you know, it was a shitty car. Inside, I was feeling worse and worse about myself, but I still wasn't ready to admit that it could be, you know, some other kind of problem. It was just always circumstances. Wrong place at the wrong time, you know. Started getting arrested on a regular basis. Tried going home and working things out where I'd get on the bus and actually go back to the suburbs. But what I do is I get off the bus out there, I start drinking out there. And then I tell myself, well, I could still walk home even if I couldn't get a cab, you know. I just couldn't make it home. Just couldn't do it. And things just kept on getting progressively worse. And I ended up splitting up with my wife. And at the time, that didn't really cause me too much problems because I had been through it so many times with her, over drinking and other things and money. Yeah, you know, what's the difference, you know? Probably come back anyway. Well, this time she didn't come back. And that was just another notch in the old holster, another reason to stay drunk, you know. See that? You know, she's bailing out on me. I'm working so hard. I'm never home because I work hard. And and I just, you know, I'm laughing when I'm telling you this because this is really bringing me back, you know. it amazes me how I used to live. It just amazes me. I ended up in the street, finally, you know. All war stories aside, I lost my license 3 times in 3 different states, and trying to get them all straightened out when I finally got sober was a nightmare. I mean, it was just enough to drive you crazy. And I remember I lost my license one time driving in Jersey, and then I got it back, and then I lost it again by the same cop, stopped me because I went to the same place and got caught, you know, stewed in the same area, and then got my license back, but I didn't have a car one night, so I rode a bicycle to the place, and I was drunk, and they took my license away for that too, you know, and then I didn't have a license after that, and one time I was drinking at the same place, I was walking, and the guy pulls me over, you know. I said, what are you going to do, take my fucking sneakers now? You know, I mean, there's nothing left now. So, anyway, that's his fault. Now, he's harassing me, you know. Guy can't even get drunk anymore. And other isolated things used to happen, like, you know, I became like a lawn ornament when I did. Where it's real nice and everything, you know. You don't have no lawn in Brooklyn, basically. You just, but in New Jersey, you did. And see, what I didn't know is that, you know, I became a decoration for the lawn. And I don't know how many times I walk up in the middle of the lawn, halfway up the stairs. You know, I just, and it used to amaze me because I'd wake up, you know, face on the patio, and I'd be like, what the fuck? How do I, you know, it baffled me. I was sure that somebody carried me out of the house. Or I'd wake up the next morning and the whole house would be just turned upside down. I mean, refrigerator one time. Refrigerator through the back door out on the porch. I mean, through the door. And I was enraged when I woke up because I wanted to know who broke into the house and did it. You know, to have my wife turned around and told me, you did it in the rage last night, you know. You had guys I never saw before in the house. You were playing cards. You got into a fight with one of them. All of this stuff happened. I never even knew about it, you know. So, one time trying to patch things up, I decided that I might be having a problem with chemicals, but it wasn't alcohol. It was definitely drugs. And if I could get rid of the drugs, my drinking would straighten itself out. Because at that time, I was kind of really heavy into a lot of coke and things like that. And I just figured this was my out. I figured I could probably live without the drugs as long as I could keep drinking. And that probably wasn't a problem anyway. Because at this point, the drinking was just going hand in hand with my drug abuse. So I went to NA with somebody that a friend of mine knew. And so I went to a couple of meetings and I didn't say nothing, and I stayed straight even without alcohol, which pissed me off because I didn't expect for them to tell me at the first meeting I couldn't drink either. You know, I looked at the rules and, you know, I said, okay, those are all nice, but why can't you drink? You know, what's the problem? You know, and so actually I was disillusioned, and I figured if I just, maybe I better just do what I've done so many times over. As soon as I said I was going to NA, things, everybody started smiling and shit around me, you know, family and everything. Oh, he's getting straight. And I kind of like that, you know, they all got off my ass. And needless to say, that didn't work. And I did the same thing with AA. I went into AA sometime after that. It was another cure-all thing, and I went to the meetings, and I had the old lady bullshitted. I mean, I really did, because I quit drinking pretty much, at least in front of her. I would stop by the time I got off of work, but by the time I got home, 2-3 hours later, I'd be gone from my breath. But I told her I was still allowed to smoke pot. Because, you know, they like to wean you off, See? And I used to go out, you know. Sooner or later, she caught on it wasn't the right thing to do, you know, thanks to Al-Anon, you know. Somebody turned around to Al-Anon, that fucked things right up, you know. So I started getting, like, really miserable and shit. And I stayed pretty good for about another month, and then I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I said, look, I think I found the cure and this and that. Needless to say, we split up again. I went my way, she went her way. And I ended up in the city, pretty much living on the street within a year from that time. I was just definitely sleeping in doorways. And, you know, they nicknamed me the troll at work. To this day, I don't know how I kept my job. At one point, I took a leave of absence. Took me right back. I used to show up to work in the same clothes for 4 or 5 days. I was going into a manhole. What the hell do I want to change for? What's the difference? I'm going in this freaking sewer, manhole. You know, what do you care what I wear? I did my job. I could drink while I was doing my job. As long as I did my work, you know. All right, you know, and that was all pretty much commonplace with everybody else that I was working with. They all drank. I mean, all of them. I started sinking real low probably when it started getting real cold. And right around December and the holidays, I was pretty much at the end of my rope. But I was at the point where I didn't know if I could live sober, but I knew I couldn't live the way I was living. But my teenage vision of me going out in a blaze of glory before I was 30, you know, in some kind of operation, just wasn't happening. I was painfully beginning to realize that I would probably just drag on and on and on and on and on this way. So I had actually reduced myself to panhandling and everything, you know. And one fella that I was trying to hit up for some money told me that there was a meeting over on 13th Street in Lexington in the city. And it was at midnight that he wasn't going to give me no money, but if I went up there, I could get some free chow. And I thought about it, and I used the food as an excuse, but I think deep down I was looking for a way, you know. And, you know, I've heard people say they went to the first meeting and everybody, you know, a lot of happy faces, wasn't what they expected. This one was what I expected, man. There was trench coats and brown bags all over the fucking place. And they're bouncers, you know. And DTs and wet brains just babbling on and on. I mean, the loud ones, they just bring them out to the back door or just stick a cup of coffee in their hand. Or sometimes they had to send them out because they just beyond repair, you know. I mean, it's definitely a malfunctioning unit completely. And I saw that that was my future, you know. And there was a lot of despair in that room. I mean, despair was in that room. Not the happy face, you know, that I see now in a lot of meetings I go to. These were other guys like me, a lot of them, women. It was a midnight meeting in the city. And man, there was a lot of guys with that same look on their face that must have been on my face, like, you know, what the fuck? You know, what do I do now? And but for that hour that I was there, I'll be damned if I didn't have some kind of peace of mind, you know. Just for the time I was there, I drank my coffee, ate my free donut, didn't put nothing in the basket, you know. I didn't hang around, but I was warm for an hour and this and that, and I kept on coming back. The next day, the first thing I did was call the AA number and find out where the headquarters was, and I went up there and I got a schedule, and I just started making meetings. I've been in the same clothes for hours on end. And finally, I slowly but surely I just started to see that there might be a light at the end of the tunnel, but I didn't want to believe it, you know. Incidentally, talking about, I'm sorry I'm jumping around, but these things jump into my head, you know, and alcohol. I don't know if any of you know about it, the Staten Island Ferry. For most people in the city that are in the boat that I was in, so to speak, a good way to keep warm in the winter is to ride the ferry back and forth, all right? You ride downstairs, you know, and the only problem is every time you get to the other side of the harbor, the cops wake you up trying to make you get off, you know? But it's a quarter well spent. I mean, that's a quarter that gives you a couple hours sleep on a real cold night. So anyway, to avoid the cops waking me up, brilliant idea. I climbed up into the lifeboat on the outside, see, and it had these covers on it. I slept there. And I went out like a light, you know. And I heard some noise, and I woke up, scared me half to death for a second. I thought maybe I was in a coffin or something. I didn't know, you know, I forgot. I started banging around. I stuck my head out from under this cover. And if you've ever seen rush hour in New York City on a ferry boat, there must have been 200 people at the front of that boat all waiting to get off. And here I am looking out the lifeboat. And needless to say, the transit police or boat cops or whatever they were hauled me out of there. And that was the day before I went to that meeting, you know. So there was a few isolated incidents that kind of triggered it. Anyway, after I got in the program, I was afraid that some of this might rub off on me. I figured that there was still an outside chance maybe I wasn't an alcoholic, but I had to be careful because if I kept on coming around, I might start believing, you know, some of this shit and start thinking that I'm an alcoholic. And I might get brainwashed. And, you know, there might be a cure down the road. Who knows? But just play your cards right, keep your mouth shut, don't say nothing, and see if you can learn the ropes, you know. It was basically my idea. I kept my mouth shut and kept on waiting for something to happen for probably 4 or 5 years. But the amazing thing is I didn't go back out after that time. I stayed in. I kept on coming back because I wasn't getting into any more trouble. I was still in all kinds of trouble from everything I did before that, but I wasn't getting in any more trouble. I was able to put two and two together on that one, you know. And my life has gotten immeasurably better since I stopped drinking and doing drugs. I took my last drink in January of 1982. So, I don't know. That's a while. And that's one day at a time. And I'm grateful for everything that I learned in these rooms. I don't think I'm smarter than the average alcoholic or anything like that, but I do think that other people can make the mistakes for you, you know. When somebody came in and slipped and told me it was too shitty out there, I hung in one more day, you know. And eventually I got to the point where I knew I couldn't go back out there. It was a dilemma. You know, AA had completely ruined any possibility of my drinking happily again. And I knew that, you know. When I slipped, that time I slipped from the NA and the other time I slipped from the AA, you know, I would go into a bar and I would start looking around and I'm an alcoholic, you know. You got a fucking problem drinking alone. You know, I was an expert, subject matter expert. And as I got more shit-faced, you know, I would explain to these drunks how they could, you know, save themselves. So I'd already been through the program and, you know, graduated, you know, king of AA and all of that, you know. But I've made all of my friends are AA people. I have, I get more fellowship just from the guys I play ball with. I think we've got the only softball team that's got, you know, good behavior and community service awards, but we have a lot of fun. And I always used to wonder what my destiny in life was, you know, because I could never figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I've learned in the program not to cry about things that might have been, because I've come to realize that this is it. This is where I belong. I belong with my friends in this program. And I have a good family life today. If you look at my kids, you can tell I take care of them. You know, they don't survive on peanut butter and things like that. I don't piss in my pants anymore. I won't puke on your couch if you invite me over, you know. I probably won't try to hit on your wife and you know what I'm saying? You know, things you do, right? Not even know it. And I've had so much fun that I couldn't trade all that in for one drink. It's just not worth the price. And every time something's happened in my life that I thought would be my reason to get drunk, I've been able to get through it by coming to the rooms. And I heard one person in here say one time, you know, and I hope she doesn't get mad at me because I could completely understand this from her point of view. Sometimes, you know, everybody will use things to their own advantage, including the program, you know. And there was one lady who was justifiably upset because she said that somebody came up to her one and said, "I'm going to take you home and fuck your brains out." She was obviously upset, and I don't blame her, but I couldn't help thinking to myself, any guy in the room would, like, give their left nut to have that happen to them. So we all have our different ways of looking at things, right? Anyway, I don't know what else I could say. I'm happy, I'm sober, I'm proud of Ox. The way he's just, you know, helped a lot of people in a short amount of time. And I'm glad for the opportunity to speak, you know. Maybe I needed it. I'm going to go home and I probably won't drink tomorrow. Anyway, thanks.